From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
We can get this budget done if we go back to the way we used to do it under our last budget of working collaboratively, and we can provide a solution to the Illinoisans without digging deeper into their pockets.
In the last year, there have been 119, I believe, 119 DCFS youth who have passed away, and we can never let that happen again. Ladies and gentlemen, that is going to take additional revenue.
We don't want there to be a culture of making decisions to take children. We don't want there to be a culture of making decisions to leave children at home. We want the culture to be make decisions based on what's best for the individual, child, and family, where their safety and risk are taken into consideration about the outcome.
The bodies of the women up here are not political pawns.
That's right.
My relationship with my physician and my relationship with my God is no politician's business.
So far this year, Illinois State Police troopers have written over 2,000 citations for move-over violations, and this is more than six times the amount of citations written at this time last year. More than twice the number of citations written in all of 2018.
Well, Illinois may come down harder on those who fail to move over when a police officer is on the side of the road, strengthening what's known as Scott's Law. Also, abortion rights supporters, they want some action at the State House, and Governor Pritzker calling for an overhaul of DCFS procedures. And it is 2 weeks until the scheduled adjournment of the legislative session. Some lawmakers say that they're not sure they can get everything done in that time, including a state budget. There's a lot of disagreement on which way to go. We're going to talk about that and more coming up on State Week. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford, and in studio with me, Charlie Wheeler, director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield and a longtime journalist. Also, Daisy Contreras, State House reporter. And in our State House studio, we have Brian Mackey, State House editor, and Rebecca Enzel. She reports for Capital News Illinois. And Rebecca, good to have you on with us.
Thank you.
Brian, I'm going to turn to you first. Let's get a budget update. Here we are, 2 weeks away. The governor has a lot of ideas that he wants included in a budget plan. And are we any closer to getting this thing done?
Well, we're closer, and it seems like it's going to be an easier job because, as we talked about last week, there was this April surprise, $1.5 billion in tax payments that Illinois had not anticipated. People are projecting, the governor's office at least is projecting, that some of that bounty will continue into next year, giving them a little more money to play with. But exactly what to do with that money and whether it obviates the need for any other new money coming in is really the political divide. You had Republicans this week, as they did last week, claiming that you could sort of toss out Governor Pritzker's proposal to impose a tax on plastic bags. You could scrap the idea to triple or at least raise the cigarette tax and impose a tax on vaping and all the sorts of things that the Governor Pritzker wanted to do in terms of creating new taxes or raising existing taxes. Republicans say, you don't have to do that. Please, let's get back to negotiating on this. But Democrats are saying, wait a minute. You know, one, we have the supermajority, but, you know, we're happy to negotiate, but they don't really ultimately have to, probably. On the other hand, they're saying that, you know, yes, this is great that we have this bounty, but it's a one-time thing. We're not sure it's going to continue. We still think we need additional revenue to do all the things we want to do, like fix DCFS, as we heard Majority Leader Greg Harris saying at the top of the show.
Well, Brian, you mentioned the Republicans talking about negotiations. They are in what is known as the super minority, meaning that Democrats could override a governor's veto with just Democratic votes. They have enough of that in both chambers. But Republicans, are they sitting there basically just on the sidelines right now, or are they in some type of talks with the governor and other legislative leaders?
Well, as far as we know, there had been these working groups, right? House Democrats. So the governor, the way the budget works, the governor gives his big speech that happened in February. Then the various legislative committees, the appropriations committees, hear testimony from all the agency directors, state universities, people like that, about what their spending priorities are. And as we understand it, the House Democrats started from a rather austere place. I've heard they assume no revenue growth, really, and none of these new taxes, and put together a pretty brutal budget that would have involved cutting across state government. Obviously, a lot of Democrats don't really want that to be the final budget. So maybe this was a political exercise to sort of open their eyes, you know, open the eyes of the rank and file to the sort of, you know, why the some of the leadership thinks these tax increases might be necessary, because this is what the budget would look like without that. And Republicans were reportedly involved in that process, but they're saying there's all this extra money that's come in and none of the rank and file, Democrats or Republicans, are being consulted on what, how to use that extra money that's coming to the state government.
Now, Charlie, let me ask you on this, because when we talk about like extra money coming into the state and people look at that and think, hey, happy days are here again, we're talking about a state that still has a huge backlog of bills that it hasn't paid. Some of those stretch back, you know, many months, even years. The state, you shouldn't get too excited right now, should it, when it comes to any type of, you know, short-term windfall that's coming in?
I mean, we should be thankful that we have a short-term windfall, but to the notion that, oh, now we don't have to worry about anything else, I think is pretty ludicrous. The reason I say that is the morning of Friday, May 17th, as we're taping the show, the comptroller reported there's a $6.9 billion backlog. These are bills that we owe people for services already rendered for which we don't have the cash to pay. Roughly 86,000 vouchers are backlogged. So the idea that, oh, we don't have to worry about new revenue, I don't think that holds water. And as a matter of fact, the Civic Federation gave kind of conditional support to the budget, a report that came out the other day, and they said that they can support the budget because the governor has decided to use this windfall, so to speak, to not have to stretch out pension payments, not declare a pension holiday. And in my mind, if you want to say, well, we don't need to raise cigarette taxes, we don't need to do some of this other stuff, on the other hand, there's a huge need for a capital program. Because of the constitutional amendment that we passed a couple years ago, we can't take the gas tax and use it to pay for some suburb sewer system. So we'll need a source of revenue. Why not take the cigarette tax and all the other stuff that the governor proposed and use those revenues for a so-called vertical, not roads and bridges, but buildings and infrastructure maintenance that's needed around the state?
Well, Daisy, let me ask you, because the public's appetite is never there for paying higher taxes, of course. And here you've got all of these different taxes coming at people at one time. I think that's the difference now that I see maybe from other years. Often there was, you know, money being talked about, you know, we'll raise this fee or this tax to help fund a capital program or this specific need. But we're talking about a lot of stuff at one time. And the governor's also discussing a graduated income tax that, you know, could possibly pass this year and could be voted on by the public in the 2020 general election and then become law. So it would raise more money that way. It seems to me like, again, that appetite probably isn't there among the public. Can they sell it in the last couple of weeks?
Well, the governor and his administration also not only has that to sell, but also the idea that, well, you know, if we don't want higher taxes, we can turn to legalizing recreational marijuana or legalizing sports betting. People already like to do it. Some people already out there are doing it in the black market. So let's go that route as well. So it's really difficult to say for sure because there are so many moving parts, so many different proposals out there that still haven't really materialized and on how they're actually going to work.
I think another thing to keep in mind is we've talked about how there's only 2 weeks left. But on the other hand, the Democrat supermajority, more important than being able to override the governor, because in my mind, there's no possibility that the Democratic-led legislature is going to pass some bill that Governor Pritzker, a Democrat, is going to veto. That's just not going to happen. On the other hand, having the extra majority means that Democrats alone can pass a budget after May 31st. So if they run over into the beginning of June, they still don't need Republican help if they remain unified.
Don't say that, Charlie. But go ahead, Brian. We can. I don't want to get into
a
long summer.
Well, if they remain unified, here. But that's always a question when it comes to those things like where you have to raise taxes. And I was just going to add, getting to Charlie's earlier point about, you know, well, maybe you don't need these taxes for the budget. You know, the annual operating budget. You can use them for capital. There are also Democrats who want to see these taxes for reasons that have nothing to do with the budget or capital or anything like that, because they want to reduce the use of cigarettes and e-cigarettes, and they want to reduce the use of plastic bags. So these taxes were chosen not only because of the revenue potential, but because they also achieve other democratic aims, such as reducing smoking and reducing the use of plastic bags, for two examples.
We'll come back to a couple of the things we've sort of touched on here regarding the budget, but I did want to move on to another point of discussion. I think when it comes to state government news around the country this week, what probably prompted the most interest among folks was some legislation that has passed and even been signed into law in the state regarding abortion rights and some areas to restrict abortion. And Rebecca Anzell with Capital News Illinois joining us. Rebecca, you've been covering this issue. Illinois is not going to pass something so restrictive. I think that's pretty clear with the type of legislature that we have here. But there are still some abortion rights supporters who say that the state should be taking more action.
Yeah, so Representative Kelly Cassidy and Senator Melinda Bush held a rally in conjunction with Planned Parenthood and the ACLU on Wednesday. They looked at what happened in Alabama and Georgia and several other states around the country that passed abortion restrictions. And they held this rally to try to get the Reproductive Health Act moving again. It was introduced in February, and it's been sitting in legislative limbo. The Reproductive Health Act would repeal Illinois' current abortion law and sort of pass this legislation that both opponents and proponents sort of agree would make Illinois the most progressive state in the country in terms of its reproductive health law, which is what something that Governor Pritzker vowed he wanted to do.
So we're sitting here at this point. Does the action in these other states, does that prompt state lawmakers in Illinois to take this action? Maybe something that they possibly were going to do or weren't going to do beforehand. Does this sort of light the fire under them?
I guess we'll see. It hasn't moved in months. Like I said, it was introduced in February. It almost immediately was bumped into a subcommittee, which nobody really knows why. The chairwoman of the committee that it's in has never explained her decision to do that. And then, like I said, nobody's really spoken about it. There have been huge pro-life rallies in the Capitol. Some people believe that spooked House Speaker Mike Madigan. And then, you know, we saw what happened around the country, and Representative Kelly Cassidy had said that scared her. She showed up to the rally crying, actually, on Wednesday. And she said that this sort of lit a fire under her. She wants to see this move. Representative Chris Welsh was also at the rally. He chairs the executive committee in the House. He said that he wants to take this bill, the Reproductive Health Act, out of legislative limbo and move it into his committee, which he said he would vote for it and might move it onto the floor next week. So we might see some action on it. Depends, you know, what House Speaker Mike Madigan would want to do.
Go ahead, Charlie. You wanted to weigh in, I think.
Yeah, I was going to say that it seems to me that part of the sense of urgency is we have all these very restrictive laws passed in other states, more conservative states than Illinois, with the sole objective, well, not the sole objective, the main objective is to get something before the U.S. Supreme Court, which now has a right-leaning majority in hopes of overturning the Roe v. Wade decision and therefore making abortion, raising the possibility of abortion becoming illegal. And I think what they're worried about here, what the pro-choice people are concerned about, is that without Roe v. Wade, women's reproductive rights might be jeopardized. And I remember back in the day after Roe v. Wade was first promulgated, the legislature went through kind of a song and dance pattern where the legislature would pass very restrictive abortion bills. Governor Thompson would veto them. The legislature would override the vetoes. The ACLU would challenge the law in federal court, and the law would be declared unconstitutional. And that was I don't want to say game because people were serious about it, but it was an opportunity for pro-choice people and pro-life people to satisfy their constituents, while all the while knowing that this was going to be meaningless in the long run.
I was going to add that I think this shows one of the more interesting dynamics of these Democratic supermajorities with an ultra-wealthy Democratic governor. Governor Pritzker is fond on the campaign trail of quoting Will Rogers, who said, "I am not a member of any organized political party. I am a Democrat." And I think we are seeing that the real important divides are not so much Democrats versus Republicans as they've been in the past, but Democrats against other Democrats. And I've said on the show before, one of the reasons that Illinois Democrats have such big majorities is that they are a big tent party. And that means that they recruit and even encourage members to vote their districts. And if a legislator believes her or his district is anti-abortion, then they vote that way. And that's why I think you see, as Democrats have grown, you have more conservative Democrats in the party. On the other hand, you also have a big uptick in progressive, self-declared progressive Democrats this time around. And that's where I think you really, everybody thinks that this is now the time when they can get their thing done, because look at all the power the Democrats have. And I think that's why you're seeing these tensions rise to the surface within the Democratic Party.
And I wanted to add that Illinois started on this pathway to trying to protect the legality of abortion in Illinois back in 2017, when then Governor Rauner signed House Bill HB 40 into law, and it had a provision, a trigger provision, that would confirm that abortions would remain legal in Illinois if ever the U.S. Supreme Court rolled back on Roe v. Wade. So we kind of started there, and it would be interesting to see how far these new proposals would go.
And before we move on from that, Rebecca, I'm going to go back to you since you've been covering this a lot. Brian brought up an interesting point there, too, about the big tent of the Democratic Party. But I'm guessing there's a lot of folks maybe in some tighter districts that would prefer not to have to vote on some of these bills, that they would prefer these types of controversial issues to sort of not have to deal with those. Those have been, as you mentioned, tied up in a subcommittee, not seeming to move anywhere. They may be forced to vote on that. Are you hearing any type of rumbling, you know, from the rank and file lawmakers regarding this?
Yeah, I heard from a Senate Democrat the other day that when he had heard a rumor that this might move next week, he had said to himself, you know, darn, because the Senate Democrats didn't want to have to deal with this bill this session, and they were kind of glad that it was stuck in a subcommittee. The thing with this bill is, proponents paint it as, you know, we are solidifying Illinois' abortion access and reproductive health access. But this bill is much more than that. I don't want to get too far into detail and take up a lot of time, but it goes far deeper than that. And that's where a lot of, I think, Democrats are sort of getting hung up, is it does a lot more. Some legal experts will make an argument that it could mess up the criminal code. It could hurt people in the health field who might have a moral or ethical or religious objection to helping perform abortions. So there's a lot in that bill, and it's not, you know, it doesn't just shore up protections for people who want to get an abortion or have access to contraception.
Yeah, I would add, though, to the point that Brian was making, if you actually look at where the Democrats are from, their supermajorities derive from the suburbs, which, unlike the olden days when Democrats' majorities had a large contingent from southern Illinois, I think there's only like a half a dozen Democrats in the House not elected from a Chicagoland district. And the people from the suburbs tend to be less conservative, more progressive or liberal, if you will, than the type of southern Illinois Democrat that used to be around in abundance back in my reporting days.
So this may not be as controversial as we may have thought it was for some of these
people.
Well,
and again, you only need 60 votes.
Right.
So that means 14 people get a pass. And in the Senate, it means, what, 10 people get a pass.
Well, one of the issues that I think most lawmakers have gotten behind this year has been what's known as Scott's Law. There's been some very high-profile accidents that have taken place. Three police officers killed in the state, troopers that have killed in the state of Illinois. since the start of the year. And this is a law that was designed to protect police when they have made a traffic stop along the side of the road. You're supposed to merge away from them, get into another lane, move away from them. And Daisy, this week there has been more discussion now about actually really ramping up the penalties for those that violate this law.
Yeah, so in an effort to cut down on that number, as you mentioned, there have been 16 Illinois state troopers that have been hit on the road and three that have been killed. And out of those three, two of them were killed by drivers who were in violation of Scott's law. So, Governor Pritzker and a bipartisan group of lawmakers came out with this proposal this week that would increase penalties and fines for those who violate the law. So currently the fine for the first violation is $100, and the measure would increase that fine to $250 with an additional $250 assessment, making the total fine to $500. So hopefully with this in law, we can see less of these accidents taking place.
And the governor is on board with this, correct?
That's correct, yes.
And Daisy, while we're talking with you here, let me just go to another topic that we had sort of touched on a little bit earlier, and that is sports betting. We have now seen a little bit of more discussion on this here in the last couple of weeks. This is a key part of Governor Pritzker's budget proposal. Where do we stand here with just 2 weeks left?
Well, things keep changing, as with a lot of things in the legislature right now. We do have some idea of what the framework might look like, but nothing has really been finalized or put up to a vote. Next week, we might actually expect to see some updated language mixed in with a bigger gambling expansion that would include potentially adding more casinos in the state. And that has been a topic of a lot of controversy over the last few years if we get more casinos. So we have questions about who gets to receive a license and how many will be made available and where people can actually go to place bets. So last week, there was an update to the sports betting proposal. One of the two would allow for riverboats, horse tracks, and video gaming operators to get licenses to run a sports book. This approach would also allow them to have an online or a mobile betting component, so now people can place bets online. And the Illinois Gaming Board and the lottery would be tasked with looking over rules and pretty much with overall regulation. The other proposal would have just 7 brick and mortar licenses with 3 online licenses. And in this one, something that has been argued a lot would give professional sports leagues a small royalty for people being able to bet on sports.
Do we know where the money would go from this? Have they decided that yet as far as where proceeds might go?
To education, to the general revenue.
So not one specific area.
No specific area, okay. And I think they're still trying to figure that out. And to make sense of all of this, I spoke to several gambling experts who have followed legalization of sports betting in other states, most recently Iowa and Indiana. The legal market outside of Nevada is pretty new, has only been around for a year this week. This week was the one-year anniversary since the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that states could make up their own rules. And there really isn't much data out there on how well states are doing with long-term revenues. But some trends are clear, and according to these experts, for those states like Illinois that are still trying to figure it all out, states need to make sure that tax rates are competitive, so sports books operators get taxed on the revenue that they make. So an example is if $1,000 are being put in a game on a bet on a game, and the sports book wins $50, those $50 will be subject to the tax. So the current Illinois proposal would have this tax rate at 25%, which is pretty high, probably the second highest in the country from all those states that already have a legal framework. And I don't want to get too much into the weeds of this, but for comparison, Nevada's tax rate is close to just 9%, and they've been doing this for decades. So eventually this cost gets passed down to the bettor, who would have to pay more for putting in a bet. And I mean, this is the way that sports books operators make their money. So overall, the word of caution here is let's not keep bettors in the black market. They will avoid extra costs as much as they can. And the second thing to keep in mind also is that states need to make sure there's a mobile and an online component. And so far, no state with a legal market has given royalties to any professional sports league. So those are 3 things that gambling experts say lawmakers need to keep in mind.
So there's a lot to work out on this issue, also some other key issues. And Brian, this week, the Chicago Tribune had a report basically saying that, you know, all this stuff is piling up on J.B. Pritzker and that the governor's agenda might be lagging behind a bit. Get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that any one of these issues, be it legalizing cannabis, legalizing sports betting, any one of these issues in another year would suck up all the air at the end of session and would be a major focus. And yet here we are. Governor is trying to do that. He's also trying to pass this graduated income tax, both a constitutional amendment to put that on the ballot, as well as a separate legislation that would lay out the rates. This is just a lot to do. We have 2 weeks left. You certainly, it would not be unprecedented for the lawmakers to be able to come together and get this kind of stuff done. So I'm not, you know, declaring session over by any stretch of the imagination, but it is a lot to do. And there are so many competing interests and so much money at stake. And of course, that is what draws a lot of people to their involvement in state government, is that they have money at stake. And so that is where you're going to continue to see a lot of wrangling back and forth as we attempt to land this plane by May 31st.
All right, let's go to our notes from the field. Charlie, let's start with you.
Well, while many other things may be kind of in limbo or uncertain as to their fate, the legislature has sent to the governor, or has passed both houses, and it will be on its way to the governor, legislation that would prohibit state and local government agencies from contracting or exchanging payments with private prison companies for any detention purposes, including federal immigration detention. Now, roughly 30 years ago, we passed a bill saying that we can't have private prisons in Illinois. This was extended to other kinds of detention facilities, and the genesis or the impetus for that was when the Village of Dwight approved a proposal by the Immigration Centers of America, which is associated with, as the name suggests, detaining illegal aliens, for a 1,200-bed facility that would have doubled the ICE capacity in the Chicago region.
Okay. Rebecca?
So proponents of a bill to legalize recreational marijuana want to automatically erase the criminal records of those convicted of having pot when it was illegal. But as Dean Olson of the State Journal Register first reported this week, that may violate Illinois' constitution. A group of state's attorneys say that it's a separation of powers issue. The governor can pardon people and commute sentences. The legislature can make a process to do that, but they can't do it themselves.
Brian?
An interesting case was argued at the Illinois Supreme Court this week. The main question is whether the First Amendment protects so-called revenge porn. Illinois makes it a felony to share private sexual photos without the subject's consent. In this case, the defendant challenging the law on free speech grounds is a woman. Her fiancé received explicit photos from another woman that he was having an affair with, as sort of to let family and friends know why she was breaking off, or that the marriage was not going to happen. She sent around some of these photos with a 4-page letter, and now she is facing this felony prosecution for that. And her attorney is arguing that once somebody releases those photos, it's the government cannot restrict how they're used if the recipient of them wants to share them freely.
And Daisy.
Governor J.B. Pritzker and the acting DCFS director, Mark Smith, announced this week an overhaul of the state's troubled child welfare system. That comes after a report criticized the Department of Children and Family Services' reluctance to remove children from their homes. So this will be a research-based approach that includes 9 recommendations, including improving supervision, refining procedure for closed cases, and working with state's attorneys to make necessary removals of children from their homes.
All right, that wraps up another State Week. Members of our broadcast included Charlie Wheeler, Brian Mackey, Daisy Contreras, and Rebecca Enzel with Capital News Illinois. Get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.